first thing I want to do is acknowledge that you working parents are here, and high five the person next to you, around you, and say, I'm so glad you're here. So glad you're here. Woo. So glad y'all are here. Yes, so glad you're here. I know, but there's other things you might like to be doing. So we have an hour together, and what Ariana talked about, it's a lot of information, so if y'all are good with this, I'm going to give you the information in that hour, and then take the 10 minutes after that to answer any questions. I can jump on the tangent train with the best of them. So what I find happens a lot is people ask questions, and then they're jumping aboard, and then I don't get to all the content. So that's what I'm going to do, but I do love questions. You'll see it's one of the techniques. So stay after. We'll get this done in an hour, to stay after, and we can answer your questions. So power struggles. We were talking about what top subject it could be on, and I said, you know, a big pain point for parents are power struggles. And when we can alleviate those power struggles, that gives us more time to have that peaceful relationship with our kids that we all want. Because I don't know about y'all, but power struggles are really time consuming. The first thing I want to do, which I'll set here, is talk about really quick about the brain, because so much of these techniques that we're going to look at, it helps if we kind of know what's going on with our kiddos' brains. And that's one of my passions, is brain-based parenting, because we now have that brain knowledge. And I believe so firmly that we should work with the brain and not against it. And a lot of what occurs for us is we either copycat or whiplash parent how we were parented. So it's like, oh, I had a drill sergeant. I'm not going to do that. So now I'm a jellyfish parent. I'm a total pushover, right? Or I have a drill sergeant. Now I'm a copycat because I don't know any different. And now I'm a drill sergeant. And a lot of those styles don't work with the brain. So I apologize for the simplicity of it. Is anyone familiar with Dr. Siegel's work? Dr. Dan Siegel? Highly recommend him. Love his stuff. So he talks about, he's an interpersonal neurobiologist, and he has a fantastic books. The two that I would highly recommend to start with is The Whole Brain Child, as well as No Drama Discipline. Those are both great books, and it's looking at the brain and how we can work with the kids. One of the techniques we're looking at today comes from those books. So we've got the brain, and again, these were just simple parts of the brain. If there's any neurologists in the audience, I apologize. But it helps us understand, when we're working with our kids, what's going on. So we've got our brain, we've got the brain stem part, which is the reptilian part of the brain. That's how we don't have to think about breathing. It does it all for us, right? And then in this part of the brain is what we call the limbic part of the brain. And in the limbic, we have something called the amygdala. And that's our flight response part of the brain. Fight, flight, or freeze. I don't know about you all, but in my experience with kids, they usually fight. Because sometimes you'd be like, ooh, stress response, maybe you'll flee, that'll work. And then I could just like calm down. But they usually like to stay and fight. So, and then the limbic is also where our hippocampus is, and that's memory storage. But we're just going to focus on the amygdala, because that's the stress response. And that makes up the limbic. And then over the limbic part of the brain, we have our, this is the cortical part of the brain. We're going to focus on the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is where we like our kids to spend a lot of time. Who knows what's in the prefrontal cortex part of the brain? Yes, logic. What else? Logic lives there.
I just know it's not that developed until they get into college.
24, yeah. It can depend, but yes, that's what we're looking at. So, and this is why that can be tricky with our kids, because that's where logic is. That's where executive functioning is. That's where empathy lies. That's where the calm, let's think about it, lives. Right? And so it's not, like you said, and apparently this is the brain, right? It's not fully developed until they're 24. So what's happening is we're parenting this is what we're parenting. This is a fully developed, you know, prefrontal cortex, and our little people are walking around like this, with a prefrontal cortex that's just hanging in there. And then if something goes wrong, like the pair of socks that they wanted aren't clean, and they have 500 other pairs of socks, but that pair isn't clean. And their brother said something mean to them, and the toast wasn't cut the right way. You know, for those of you that have little people, the struggle's real. And then, boom, they flip their lid. This is what Dr. Siegel calls, they flip their lid. And much like someone hanging on the edge of a cliff for dear life, hanging, 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 and can't hang any longer, and that goes, oh, it's fast and dramatic. So you can see your little person just, and then all of a sudden, they're a brainstem. You're dealing with a brainstem, and that's a full-on tantrum. But this happens, this isn't just for our kids. We're the same. In theory, because we're all adults here, we have a fully developed prefrontal cortex, but we didn't sleep well, and our partner didn't fill the car up with gas, and I'm late for a meeting. True story, right? And you get in the car, and you're like, what? And then you get to the meeting, and this happens, and then you flip your lid, and you're just, it's dramatic. You have a little more control over it, but what can happen in a power struggle is your little kiddo whose brainstem comes in, I'm hungry, I want to eat, I want cookies for dinner, why can't we have cookies for dinner? And then you're just like this, right? And you're like, we're not having cookies for dinner. That's not an appropriate food. What do you mean? And then you engage in them to try to explain why you're not having cookies. Boom, your brainstem, and now two of you are brainstem. Can anyone relate to this? Yes, and if you want to see it play out, I highly recommend at the holiday time, the toy aisle at Target. Sometimes I'll take my girls on little sociological windows, and I'll be like, okay, this is the brainstem playing out. Let's see if you can find it. And you can see, like, the kid and my girls are like, that bear's about to go. And I'm like, they are. So these techniques that we're looking at are techniques to help us stay in brainstem and work with our kids when they've got their prefrontal cortex engaged. So one other thing before we jump into the techniques is that we live in a left brain world. So the left brain is the letter of the law, the right brain is the spirit of the law. The left brain loves the logic, the reasoning, the lists. The right brain is big picture thinking, gestalt, right? Creative. It's also our emotional part. So when our little people are in power struggles and freaking out, the right brain is engaged. But what do we usually come to that freak out with? Whether they're 2 or 14, still freaking out, we come left brain. We try to use our words. We try to logic with them. We try to use reason. And that does not register with the right brain. So we're going to look at some techniques on how we can register with the right brain and then engage our left brain, their left brain. But because we live in a left brain world, that's what we tend to do. And you probably experienced it, right? Like your kid's having a tantrum, what do? You're like, now, come on, this isn't the end of the world, right? We try to use that reason, and they're just their right brain. And for them, it is the end of the world. So we need to match right brain to right brain. We're going to look at how we do that. One last thing, I said that before, so really two last things, is we actually, our society, because we're left brain, views the human as thinking beings that feel, when in actuality, we're feeling beings that think. So every external stimulus comes first to the amygdala and the limbic region. And that region cares about two questions. Am I loved and am I safe? And so if something's happening, you know, this external stimulus comes to our kid's brain, the brain's going to ask really quick, am I loved, am I safe? And only if those answers are yes to both does it get sent up to prefrontal cortex. So if we're giving them a demand, telling them, you know, like, I need you right now, you know, right, bedtime routine, that can be some serious brainstem action. Right now, I need you to do da-da-da-da-da, right? So now that's coming first to their amygdala. We like to think it goes to their prefrontal cortex, and the amygdala's like, I don't really feel safe right now. Alert, 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 fight or flight or freeze, fight, flight or freeze. And then now you have a power struggle about going to bed. When, if you could work with the brain and come in and you get below their eye level, because for our kids' brains, which are still wired from cave time, anything above is seen as a threat, even if you're not. It's seen as a threat. So if we can get to their eye level or below, calm our voice, love them up, and let them know what we need, giving them choices. Your teeth in the kitchen sink or the bathroom sink, up to you, you decide. Then the amygdala is like, we're safe and loved. Let's do this up. Let's go brush our teeth. Okay, so that's just a little brain science while we jump in, because I like to have that reference as we look at these techniques. So the first technique we're going to look with power struggles. And I do want to say a moment about power struggles. The human need for control is not just for kids. It's heightened because so much of their relationship, they don't have control in. But it's for everyone. And they've done research. They've done research in hospice where patients who control their own morphine drip require less morphine than if they had to ask a nurse for it. And they've also done research, which explains the morning at our house, on noise decibel, and participants that could control when they got to turn down the noise could stand a higher decibel sound than if they had to ask someone else to do it. And that happens all the time in our house because my husband and I love making our Vitamix shakes in the morning, and I'll make my shake and turn it on, and Vitamixes are really loud if anyone doesn't have one. And I'll be like, da-da-da, good morning. You know, it just sounds like angels singing to me. And then Papa drank, and then my husband makes his, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so loud. When are you going to turn that off? But I don't have any right to tell him to turn it off, right? But I'm like, whereas before it was angels singing, and now it's like, because I don't have the control. And what happens with our kids, when they don't have any control in a relationship, they actually seek it in sabotaging ways. And you've probably seen it. Your kids will self-sabotage, or my favorite maneuver, the family sabotage, just to get a sense of control. So what we want to look at doing is, how can we share control on our terms so that our kids are not looking at revengeful or saboteur ways to get it? And one of the first ways to do that is by giving choices. And you probably all heard that technique, oh, you're not going to have choices, but it doesn't work. Well, here's the thing. There's some guidelines that you have to keep in mind when you give choices. And they're listed on your sheet. The two that I really want to look at is choices. The choices that you give, I should start off by saying, this is a proactive preventative technique. You are not going to use this when your child is throwing a tantrum on the floor, and then you say, oh, wait, choices, I can give choices. Hey, do you want the green cup or the red cup at dinner? What color cup do you want? Right, because they're right-brained. They don't, like, they're so, that requires prefrontal cortex and they're not there. So this is a preventative, proactive technique that you use. And what I suggest to parents when I work with them in my coaching practice is pick what your trickiest times of day are with your kiddos, and then ahead of time, come up with a lot of choices, write them on 4x6, 3x5 cards, and place them around your kitchen, right? Who cares if they read them or if they think you're practicing for a play or whatnot? You have them up there. Because when you're tired and you're like, oh, bath time is such a power struggle, you're not going to think of your best choices then. You need to look up at the bathroom wall and you're like, oh, do you want to take a bath with goggles or no goggles? Like, you start having the choices already in there. So two things to keep in mind is that there's always an implied third choice, and that is you will decide for them, and there needs to be a time frame on the choice. That's going to depend. Love and Logic, which a lot of these techniques come from, says 10 seconds. That's what they give. You know, it's going to depend on your kiddos. What I want you to keep in mind is be aware of that time limit, because if you don't have it on there, it then becomes a manipulation. And they can be like, I don't know. What color cup do I want for dinner? And you're like, just run into the dinner. And you're like, I don't know. That's when you have to say, hey, sweet girl, green cup or red cup, up to you. You need to decide. And use those words. Use that language. Because when you say, up to you, you decide, we're reminding them, you've got control. You've got power. It's on my terms, because I don't care what color cup you drink out of. In a way, it can be a false choice. But they don't know that. That's the Jedi mind trick of it all, right? And they're like, I don't know, what color cup do I want? Now, this is going to be for the little kids. Like, if you pull this on a 14-year-old, they're going to be like, wow, what is mom smoking? Right? But you can still give choices to a 14-year-old in the same way, just not cup color. And I will say, with my girls, I have had to follow through on a choice, and it didn't go so well. So, for example, they were little, they were like 3 years years old, and I've got twins, Zoe and Quinn. You'll hear about them a lot. And Zoe just took forever to get dressed, which then took forever to get to school, which then made me late for work. So I was like, I'm going to give choices. I had the two outfits. So you want to wear this outfit or that outfit? And she's like, bright, shiny objects. Where are all the bright, shiny objects? Hey, sweet girl, it's up to you. You need to decide. Do you want to wear this outfit or this outfit? I think I could ride a unicorn. Mama, unicorns. Looks like we're going to wear this outfit. I'm deciding for you. And then I put it on her, and she started screaming and freaking out, right? At which point, her twin sister walks by with her little sippy cup and says, choice is not working. And I was like, no, Quinn, I'm in it for the long run. Don't judge yet, right? And then the next day, Zoe was a quick study, because I said, do you want to wear this outfit or this outfit? Outfit, and I'm going to put it on right now. But you may have to follow through on a choice where you're like, what? This doesn't seem to be working. But that what they're learning is that your word is gold. When you say, hey, sweet girl, if you don't decide, I'm going to decide for you. Then that is follow through that you have. The other thing I love about the 10 seconds that you need to put in there is it helps build the 10-second decision-making muscle for our kids. Because in reality, not to freak anyone out, but in reality, what gets our kids in trouble are 10-second decisions. And, you know, sure, we come together as a family, and we make, the big decisions, we make our pros and cons lists, and we talk about it. But it's the 10-second decisions that can change their life. Right? Standing in the car with all their friends saying, get in, and the driver's drunk. That's a 10-second decision. You know, do I cheat on the exam? Do I steal from the store? Do I have unprotected sex? Like, whatever it is, those are 10-second decisions. So if we can give our kids a lot of opportunity at age 2, at age 3, right? Because we need to develop a strong internal voice in our kids, because no matter how awesome they are and how awesome we are, their adolescent brain turns off primary caregiver voice when it emerges, and that's anywhere between 12 and 14. It doesn't mean they're turning you off. It's just, it's the brain preparing them to find other social support groups so they can be successful outside the cave. Because you can't survive outside the cave on your own. And so they have to turn off primary caregiver voice, which is usually the parents. But I know in the way my husband and I are raising our girls, that when they turn off our voice, I'm going to be okay with it. Because we have worked for 12 to 14 years to build that strong internal voice. And if we always tell our kids what to do all the time, we're teaching them to listen to an outside voice. And what is an outside voice but peer pressure? So I want them to make decisions. So this is a great technique because it serves two purposes. It serves the purpose of avoiding a power struggle by sharing control, and it builds up this 10-second decision-making muscle, which sets them up for adulthood and adolescence. So what are some examples of choices you can use? In the sheet, I did put in there some magic phrases for starting choices for those of you that have older kids. Those magic phrases are amazing. And when you look at them, you're like, of course they're going to go right up to prefrontal cortex. What would be best for you? Would you rather? Feel free to. You can either. So those, again, those are great things to put on a 3x5 card and stick it on your wall somewhere to get you going on those choices. But I highly recommend, I'm not going to spend too much more time on that. Usually when I do my classes, it's a dive deep. I'm giving you a little greatest hits here. But it's just that idea of creating choices ahead of time and creating choices where you don't think choices exist. Right, so when my girls were little, we moved away from the washcloth teeth brushing phase. I was like, ooh, I'm gonna go get two toothbrushes and two things of toothpaste. My husband's like, what are you doing? I'm creating choices because as a parent coach, I know that the bedtime routine can be a pain point for parents. So then when it was time, I said to my girls, do you want this toothbrush or this toothbrush? Which one are you gonna choose? Can't wait to see. I want Thomas the Train. Are you gonna choose this toothpaste or this toothpaste? Can't wait for you to decide. What? Right? So you're making choices. And then these are like deposits in the bank account so that when you get them to bed, they go, we don't want to go to bed. We don't want to go to bed. You can say, who's been making choices all night? Right, you have. Right now, mommy's making a choice. And I need you in bed. Thank you. I love you. You always end with thank you, like this assumed compliance. Apparently, it's a psychological term. It does work. I've done it with my girls. Thank you so much, Mama. Oh, was I doing that?
I'm like, no, you are. Puppet minister. One
other thing about that before we move on is make sure your choices don't have an embedded threat in there, because that a threat will trigger the amygdala. So an example from a trip that my husband and I took is little Zoe, at the time we didn't know, had sensory issues, but she didn't want to put her sun shirt on. And it was the dynamic between us, which because the parenting can also be dynamics between the partners, right? My husband's South African, is like, hey, Zoe, cover up. I'm from Michigan. I'm like, oh my God, this sun for 3 days. This is awesome. So he, you know, she already had 50 on, but he wanted the long sleeve shirt, sun shirt. And she didn't want to put it on. And so he, being a love and logic dad, was like, I'll give her a choice. But one of the steps is being violated. He's giving her a choice after she said no. Sweet girl, you need to put your sun shirt on. Nope, I don't want it on. Okay, now I'm going to give a choice. Right? You don't want to give a choice after they say no. Because now, in their brain, they're like, oh, sweet, I can negotiate with mom and dad. So then he said, well, you have a choice. You can either put your sun shirt on or spend the rest of the afternoon inside. So that would be a choice, a threat disguised as a choice. What do you think Zoe did? Well, the amygdala was like, we are not safe in love. They want to put us inside, right? So she freaked. So then once we calmed her down, the choice we gave, and this is what's so great, especially for those of you that have little ones, you're going to be like, oh, do you want to wear your sun shirt inside out or right side out? Do you want the zebra facing out or kissing your heart? And then you can see her be like, I want the zebra kissing my heart. Oh, well, then let's do that. Do you want to put the sun shirt on or do you want Mimi to put it on? I want Mimi to put it on. Right? There she's on and in the water she's going. A great one for bedtime is, are you going to go to bed like a lion or like a tiger? I still use that with my girls. And they're like, oh, and then, and I'm like, are you going to go to bed like a dog? Or, right now we've been doing really fun elephant ones. We're like, are you going to go to bed like an elephant or a giraffe? Right? And suddenly they're like, oh, I must make a choice. Like an elephant. Let's go to bed like an elephant. All right, enforceable statements. Now, this is truly Jedi mind trick. I love enforceable statements because it's a way of saying no by saying yes. Who would love that? And it's a way of us to set limits for our kids without telling them what to do. Because remember, we want that amygdala to be like, yes, we're safe in love, up to prefrontal cortex. But when we tell, and kids are going to be different. I have a very power-aware kiddo. When I tell her something to do, that is a guaranteed power struggle. But I have another one who's like, ah, and I can tell her stuff to do. And she'll be like, oh, okay, sure. She might, on the way to doing it, be distracted by, you know, lots of other things. But kids are going to be different. But if you have a very power-aware kid, I would say the greatest technique is going to be enforceable statements because you're still setting limits on them without ever having to tell them what to do. Love and Logic, this is the Love and Logic techniques, calls it moving from fighting words to thinking words. And so let's look at what fighting words look like. Fighting words are when we tell a child what to do. You get to work right now. And then the worst is when we say, and I mean it. Right? Because the kid knows it's all over. Like when we say, you need to get to work right now, and I mean it. The kid brings like, ooh, I mean it. This is good. I'm going to hook them into a power struggle because they're about to be brainstem. Telling the child what you will not allow. You're not going to talk to me that way. And I mean it. Telling the child what you won't do for them. I'm not picking up your dirty clothes. Okay, these are fighting words. When we're making these statements, we're almost guaranteeing ourselves a power struggle. So we want to switch from fighting words to thinking words. And this is based on the notion that no matter how much we think we can control other people's behavior, I hate to break it to you, we can't. The only behavior we can control is our behavior. So if I say to my kiddo, I need you laundry in the laundry room by Friday, I do laundry on Friday so I can have like somewhat of a weekend. That's my family contribution. If I keep saying, where's your laundry? I need your laundry. They tune off, I'm tired of saying it, now I'm nagging. And so what I say instead, because the only thing I can control is doing the laundry. So I say to them, sweet girl's more than happy to do laundry that's in the laundry room on Friday. Happy to do it, right? And here's the thing. If they don't have their laundry in the laundry room on Friday, they're wearing dirty clothes, they're doing their own laundry, or they're wearing the same outfit numerous days. I don't care. But I'm setting that boundary, right? Happy to do it. So let's look at the thinking words. What does that look like? And that's moving. When we use these thinking words, which is also called an enforceable statement, we're moving our kiddos into that prefrontal cortex, that thinking mode. So when one way is telling a child what he or she, when they can do something. Feel free to go out as soon as your room is cleaned, right? And you can see the magic phrases. That sounds so much better. Oh, you can't, no, you can't go out and play. Your room isn't clean. Can't go out and play until your room's not clean. Versus, sure, honey, feel free. Do a little example. No. You're not going outside. Your room's not clean. You can't go out till your room's clean. Versus, sure, sweetie, go out and play. Absolutely, as soon as your room's clean. How'd that feel? Yes, much better. Your amygdala, and the first one, your amygdala is probably like, whoa. And then the second one's like, oh, feel free. Now, here's the thing. Oh, yeah, sure, my kid's going to push back even on that. So they may come back and be like, oh, that's so unfair, it's so pretty, I just want to go play. And then you can say, that's a choice, you're making a choice, because these are choices. Feel free, you're more than welcome to go out and play as soon as your room's clean. But, I'll swear, I'll do it at the end. Feel free, you know, and it's a choice, you're making a choice. And you need to remind them, like, you're making a choice, it's up to you. And then that's going to remind them that they have the power in that relationship. Another one is telling the child the conditions under which the adult will do something. I'll be glad to discuss this with you as soon as the arguing stops. It's a great one for sibling fighting, if anyone has that going on. Twins, unite. That's just like right out of the door. We're like, oh, apparently we're going to fight. It's from day one. The other is describing the choices a child has. You may eat what is served. You may wait and see if the next meal appeals to you more. Have a picky eater. Does anyone have a picky eater? Right? How easy is it for us to take that on as our problem? I love sweet potato coconut lentil curry soup. I love it. Can't wait to eat it. Right? Oh, I gotta keep making made this stuff. So, enforceable statement. Oh, feel free. Like, don't engage. It's gonna be one of our techniques. Quickest way to get into a power struggle is to engage. So, girl, feel free to eat whatever you need to. And I will say we have boundaries on that. Whatever you need to is, if you're not eating dinner, you're taking something from the fruit bowl. And so basically she likes apples or bananas. Feel free to eat what you need to. Your next meal will be at breakfast. I just leave it at that. And so she's either having banana, an apple, or deciding that the soup sounds really good. And then here's some other examples I have listed down. Here's the thing with your enforceable statements to keep in mind. I feel like in our culture, we're sold this bill of goods that we have to do all this extra stuff as a parent. When in actuality, if we look at our definition as a parent, really all we need to do is clothe, feed, educate, and love. Clothe, feed, educate, and love. Everything else we do for our kids is out of the goodness and grace of our heart. And right there becomes your enforceable statements. Your enforceable statements, if you're having trouble thinking of them, are all those extra things you do for your kids. So when my girls were little, around 4 years old, we did this thing called Parkpalooza, and we would do like 5 parks in one afternoon. You can do it over in East Asheville, it's so fun, get the party music going, Parkpalooza. And they loved Parkpalooza. So I'd get in the car, yeah, Parkpalooza. We'd get in the car, I'd start driving, and there they were, fight. Then I'd pull over and I would calmly say, right, because all of these techniques need to be delivered in prefrontal cortex. I would calmly say, oh, so happy to take girls to Parkpalooza that don't fight. Happy, more than happy to take girls to Parkpalooza that don't fight. And literally, my 4-year-old girls in the back seat who were just brawling, Quinn turns to Zoe and says, Zoe, stop fighting. We'll fight at the park. And I was like, sweet. I don't care if you fight at the park. I just don't want it in my back seat because mom needs to focus on her podcast and driving. And then they just stop, right? And then you get to the park and they run out. They're like, Parkpalooza. And then they forget. Like half the time they're just fighting because they're bored. But I can control that. I can't control if they're going to stop fighting in the back seat of the car, but I can control if I'm going to take them to Parkpalooza. whining. I don't know if anyone's entered into the whining phase, that beautiful whining phase. I am more than happy, fill in the blank, for girls that use their strong voice. Yeah.
What about leaving Parkalooza and they whine all the way until the next park?
Yeah.
Or all the way until they get home. I want to go to the museum today, for example, the museum. I want to go to the museum all the way from Asheville to Weaver. I want to go to the museum after we spent several hours with everybody.
You'd already spent hours at the museum.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's going to be locking in empathy, which is one of our next techniques. It's going to be two things. You're going to lock in empathy, and then the going brain dead one-liner. Yeah, we'll get to that. We actually get to go brain dead. It's quite exciting. But so this idea of enforceable statements, you think of all that extra stuff you do for your kiddos, that's your enforceable statement. Oh, I love reading books. Can't wait. We are reading my girls. We love reading our empowered girl books. Can't wait to hear what's going to happen with Simone Biles at the Olympics. I'm already happy to finish reading that book when girls have finished their evening routine. We have an evening routine checkoff sheet. Highly recommend that for beautiful pictures. They walk around with their clipboard and they do their thing, right? Because then that keeps me from having to tell them what to do. Happy to read Simone Biles for girls. Because I read so much with them during the day that I'm okay them not having their nighttime book. And this is the beauty of these enforceable statements. It works within your value system. Some people aren't willing to give that up. I am. Right? And so if it's a really good book, that can be super motivating. Plus, we all curl up and they've pushed their beds together. I don't know if your twins will eventually do that. They're like, we want to be a part. We want to be together. We love each other. And they fall asleep holding hands. It's so cute. So we all do a puppy pile in bed and read some of us. Happy to do that. For girls that have done their evening routine. Check off sheet. Off they go. So that is, and that's huge. Y'all had some older kids. Ooh, you do a lot of stuff for older kids, especially if they're not driving yet. Driving them around like you're their taxi person. Like, happy to drive you to your friend's house when I'm treated with respect. Respect looks like this. You know what I mean? Like, happy, ooh, man, we do a lot. We do a lot for all ages, but those older kids, you know, because floor puzzles are kind of fun, but like, oh my God, where am I driving now? You know, all the driving gets pretty exhausting. Those are your enforceable statements. Okay, so we're going to move on to empathy. And empathy is, oh, I love empathy. It's powerful for numerous reasons. One, it does help us to avoid power struggles. But here's the thing with empathy. When we use empathy, we get information. And you've probably experienced that yourself out there in the real world, right? Like you're at the airport. Someone's chatting to you. This just happened to me on Tuesday when I was flying back. I'm like, I didn't even say anything. Right? Because empathy, over 90% of our communication is nonverbal. And that's the beauty. You can walk in empathy without saying anything. I just made some head nods. And then, oh my God, I heard all about it. And my niece and the alcoholic. And she's trying to, you know, I'm going there to take her. And we're going to extricate her. And then, And I was like, wow, empathy does get information. But this is so powerful for our kids, especially as they get older and maybe not. You know, like right now, I don't know about y'all, but like 3, 4, 5, they share everything. Almost a little too much. It's not overshare for mama. But as they get older, sometimes that sharing can decline. But when we lock in empathy, they share with us. So that's really powerful. The other thing about empathy is it's a mirror neuron. So for our empathetic neural pathways to get laid, that's only going to happen by them seeing empathy. So our kids can read about, you know, courage, and some of those pathways can get laid. They're not going to get laid unless they actually see it. So when we use empathy, they learn empathy. So that's super powerful. And then empathy, we avoid power struggles by locking in empathy because the amygdala wants to know we're safe and loved. And when we comment something with empathy, the amygdala is like, we're safe, we're loved. We don't need to fight this. Let's go upstairs to the prefrontal cortex and do what we need to. And so how do you lock in empathy? And this is like a whole class unto itself. I'm just going to touch on it because we have a little bit of time and you can look at it. Couple things. So there's 4 attributes of empathy. If y'all know Brene Brown, she's got a great video on the difference between empathy and sympathy, because we want to lock in empathy with our kids, not sympathy. Sympathy sends the message of, I feel bad for you. I don't think you can handle it. I'm going to handle it for you. And the last thing we want is to be handling our kids' problems. We need to raise problem solvers. But what empathy says is, whoa, that's hard. And I'm going to stand right here with you and be with you during this hard time. So, hard time. Here's one of the steps. Perspective taking. Leaving a museum that they've already just had a great afternoon at and they're distraught about. That can be hard for us to lack in empathy, right? Because you're like, whoa, you just had this great time at the museum and that. But we have to take their perspective. Like, the museum was everything for them, and they loved it. So we're like, I want to go to the museum. Ah. And that's when we just like, I know, the museum is so fun. So hard. It's so hard to leave the museum. But I want to go to the museum. I know, buddy. Love the museum. This is really hard. And you're laughing because you're kind of like, really? I've got to say that? But I'm telling you, when you lock in empathy with your people, your little people, with your partners, when my husband locks in empathy, I'm like, yeah, now we're talking. Right? With anyone in our lives. But our little people, they're like, oh, mom gets me. And then they're less likely to keep on and on and on. But seeing you laugh, here's the thing. We can't be sarcastic when we lock in empathy. Because that will kill it. It will kill the value of empathy. And so sometimes that's hard, right? Because you want to be like, God, you know, we realized eventually that my daughter had sensory issues, but until we got up to that point, I was like, really? A whole basket of socks? And, you know, the one pair of socks. But I had to do perspective taking. I had to go through these steps, right? I had to stay out of judgment. I had to feel with her. And I had to be like, I know, sweetheart, it's so hard. When that one pair of socks isn't there, that's so hard. And if I felt like I was going to be sarcastic because I really didn't see how hard that was, so if you find yourself being sarcastic, just whisper with that empathetic response. Because I've seen it, lower down that sarcastic mark. So one other thing about the empathy is it can be short. It should be short, sweet, and simple, right? This isn't like, we're not the sage from the stage doing some big spiel for our kiddo about life and it's tough. We're the guy by the side, and we're right there being like, oh, that's so hard. And you'll be amazed when you start locking in empathy with your kids, and they're like, at first they'll be like, what? I mean, sometimes I've been on the floor, like, Zoe's so upset, just being like, pounding on the floor, being like, oh, no, it's so hard. Right? Because here's the thing with our kiddos. When they're little and they're excited about something, we match that excitement, right brain to right brain. Ice cream, we get ice cream, this is so exciting. And you're like, yeah. Because we didn't really do a lot of desserts, and mom was just excited as kids when we do ice cream. So they're like, ice cream, mom, yeah, ice cream. Right brain to right brain. But then when they're freaking out about something, like, ooh, my socks, I can't go to school, I don't have my socks. We're like, you got a basket of socks, you have plenty of socks. We're now matching left brain to right brain. And what we need to do is we need to match them right brain to right brain. So we need to get down there if we need to on the floor where they're all upset and pouting and just be like, and here's the thing with empathy that's so great. Empathy, we're not solving any problems. I'm not on the floor solving the problem of where we're going to get the socks so we can get out the door. I'm just walking in. And what research has shown us is that when we lock in that empathy right brain to right brain, that soothing neurotransmitters come from the right brain, and I mean, come from the left brain and calm the right brain. Dopamine, serotonin, and calms down that right brain. And then when that right brain is calm, then we can say to them, we have 5 minutes before we need to get into the car to get to school. I'm curious to see if you're going to go to school with socks or no socks. It's up to you. You decide. Because here's the thing. In my world, Zoe, 5-year-old Zoe, she can survive a day at school without socks in 30-degree weather. You know what I mean? Like, she's going to have her shoes on. Sometimes that's our thing. Oh, you gotta have socks on. And I just leave it to her, right? And I'm curious to see if you do choose socks, if they'll be on your feet or in your hands. The car's gonna leave in 5 minutes. Can't wait to see you in it. And then I'm off. And I've not owned that situation. But that's not gonna work until we walk in the empathy. Because if we don't walk in that empathy, they stay, right brain. And catch yourself. You can catch yourself now that we've brought it to your attention. How many times do you try to match that right brain, also known as the tantrum, with left brain? You catch yourself, lock it in. Okay, number 4, we're moving through it. So this one is It's a quick one, and it is a fun one, right? One-liners going brain dead. What? We get to go brain dead. So here's the thing. Our kids love to hook us more than others, but we've probably experienced that where they like to engage us in power struggles. Because when they engage us in their power struggles, they potentially can flip our lid, and now their mom is brainstemmed. And when a brainstem mom is asked if there's going to be cookies for dinner, she's more likely to say, you bet. Mm-hmm. That's what we're having for dinner. Grab them and grab the ice cream. Right? Think, I got nothing left. That's what we're having for dinner because I'm all brainstem. So they like to hook us in. And like I said, I've got one that she loves to engage. Like it's kind of sport. You know, someone's like, I think she'll be a good lawyer. I'm like, I think we've surpassed that and we're right into hostage negotiating. She's bright. She's an empath, and she's a lovely human being. I mean, I would pick her to be my friend, even if she wasn't my daughter. And I have to watch, because she loves power struggles. She loves to, I don't understand why we can't do it, right? Then the minute I engage, I have now given validity to the ridiculous. But I don't understand why we can't have cookies for dinner, because you said in our family we eat fruits, vegetables, and whole foods. And these are oatmeal cookies. So you've got your whole grain, you've got your raisins, you've got your walnuts, which is a great supply of omega-3s, right? And I'm like, this is true. Like, this is how she does it. They're like at age 5. And then I'd be like, well, the cookie doesn't have any vegetables. You know, and then I'm like, oh, I was just engaged. And now I've given it validity. So she's going to see it out. Because when you enter into a power struggle, your child is like, there will be a winner. And that's going to be me. So one of the best things we can do is not engage. And it's a two-step process. We don't engage by going brain dead and repeating a one-liner over and over. Now, you'll see down here their list of one-liners. Some of them I find pretty antagonistic. This is love and logic. So I couldn't say, nice try, or that feels that way. Some people could. Some people can pull it off. The ones I pull off, that I use 3 of them, and I just rotate them through depending on the situation. Thank you for sharing. I use that a lot. But thanks for sharing, sweet girl. Thanks for sharing. And then I can just make dinner, listen to my podcast, and close that down. And you get them trained. Like in the beginning, when you use it, they'll just be still going at it, right? Because the pattern that they've had with you is, I hook them, I engage them, we enter into a power struggle, I win, and I get my way. But now, and what a good activity to do is just think to yourself, if I had time, I would do it. I usually do it in my class. But because awareness is half the battle, right? Self-awareness becomes the traits of wisdom. And for us as parents, that's one of our greatest things that we can do. What are the hooks our kids use? And if you can create a list of that, what are the hooks? And you may have 3 kids, 3 lists, they're going to use different hooks. Right? So, for example, and hooks will often touch our trigger points, but if Quinn needs something from me, she'll say, I love Daddy a little more. And apparently, she's smart, right? Like, I love this kid. She's awesome. And, doesn't have to be either or, and she's very good at hooking me in and knowing what my triggers are. And I'll just say, well, thanks for sharing, sweet girl. I love you so much. You know, then she moves past it because she didn't get what she wants. And then she went through a phase where when she was 5, she was going to run away and find a better family. And I don't know if you experienced this with the twin thing, but it was always like, you know, make Zoe do this. And I mean, sibling too, but twin, you're just in it. Same developmental. And it was always like, Zoe, you do this for her, not me. And so then she would make these decorations. And we're a small ranch house, right? So it's all the decorations are for everyone to see. I'm running away. I'm gonna find a family. And we're in a holler. Like, there's not going to be any through traffic with better families. And I'm packing up, and I'm going to find a family that's going to love me. And, you know, all that stuff. And I'll just say, I'm going to love you wherever you live. And I just go brain dead. That's my one-liner. But I'm not going to love you. You've lost a daughter. I'm going to love you wherever you live. But I don't love you. I'm going to love you wherever you live. So I'm making dinner. And she's packing up. And, you know, as the outdoor educator in there, they're really excited to see she has 2 full water bottles. Because you never know the journey to find the family that's going to love them better. But a quick drive to a little backpack. She goes out and sits on the front stoop. And I can hear her calling through. Oh, I'm finding them. They're coming. I'm going to love you wherever you live. I don't engage. And then eventually the family doesn't come, whatever she was fighting with Zoe and all that's over. And then she comes in and she says, Mama, she fell on the couch. She sure can't see God. Cover up on the couch. Just go right past it. And I've seen, like, she pulled this one when my mother-in-law was there, and my mother-in-law engaged. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm like, honey, this is your mama, so you won't see this through, right? But this is the thing, when we engage, woo! Because whatever was going on for her, she just needed to do that. And I needed her to know, no, seriously, I mean, I wasn't being sarcastic. Like, I will love that kid. Like, she's an awesome kid. I will love her wherever she lives. But I'm not going to engage. I'm making dinner, I'm moving on, I'm not engaging. But here's the thing. Sometimes our kids really want to talk to us, and they might not know how to go about doing it, or they'll pick the wrong time, or they don't have the skills. And so then that's when I say to them, I love you too much to argue. I'll argue at 7 p.m. If you're not going to argue at 6 o'clock when I'm making dinner and about to put it on the table and we're all tired and all that, I usually argue about 8, right? We've done evening routine, we've done the tutoring, which is hard. They're both severe dyslexics. Like, we've gone through that pain point, and we're at a sweet place, man. We're moving into teeth brushing and Simone Biles. Happy to argue then. Mama's had a little dark chocolate. Right? Because I want her to know. I want my daughters to know. I will always be there to talk to them. But on my terms, right? Like, I'm not going to talk to you when your brain's down. I'm like this. I need to get dinner on the table, whatever. I love you too much to argue. I'll argue at 8 p.m. I love you too much to argue. I'll argue at 8 p.m. And I had to say it a couple of times. I may never come back to argue at 8 p.m. A lot of it was just hangry, you know? The whole hangry thing comes in right at that time. So I will say, before we move on to the last two, or three, this technique will blow up if it is not done in prefrontal cortex with sincerity, authenticity, and empathy. So if you're about to lose it and you're like, you know, thanks for sharing. Love you, I love you wherever you, you know, like, then they're just gonna be like, and then it'll blow up. So if you feel like you can't go brain dead and lock in the one-liner without the authenticity and sincerity, it can go bad. I haven't seen it, but I can imagine. I have clients tell me about it. Okay, so cruising along. We started a little late, right? So I get that extra 5 minutes.
Absolutely.
Oof, okay. Just want to make sure I covered all. No, skim it. Okay, so number 5 comes from Dr. Siegel. I had mentioned him in the beginning of the workshop. Love his stuff. So it's called Name Entertainment, Connect to Redirect. And I've already kind of talked about it. It's this idea that we need to first connect right brain to right brain before we can move them into left brain. And so I love Dr. Siegel's connection principles. His first one in making that connection, right? So the first thing, it's this idea of like, I need to get into the park and they're about to freak out. Or I don't know if anyone experienced that, but like, especially with sweet little Zoe, she just gets so into her thing. And then I'm like, dinner, and that's another mom trigger, like, oh, I'll make dinner. Like, if it was just me, I would have had cereal. But it's not just me, so I made a nice dinner, and now I've called everyone, and no one's showing up. Oh, that's my trigger. Right? And then so everyone finally gets up, and so like, I gotta finish this, right? So I need to, like, come in, connect with her, and then direct her. Instead of being like, sorry, there's your power struggle. Am I safe in my love? No. So then the amygdala's like, so I come in like, get to the dinner table, and I'm barely there. And then she's felt threatened. Her amygdala's like, we're not safe for love. Fight. Boom. Power struggle. Right? And then there's all that lovely dinner. So I need to come into her with this technique. In that situation, I probably would use collect to direct, which we'll talk about in a minute. But this is what I love. The connection principles turn down the sharp music based on past experiences and future fears. Turn it down, dun, dun, dun. Turn it down, right? Not base it on past experiences or future fears. Turn that down, chase the why. We have to be asking what is at the root of our kiddos' behaviors, especially the chronic behavior. But we need to chase the why. Why, what's going on? Why are you struggling to leave the park or come to the dinner table? What's the why? And then think about the how. Because the what, how we say it is just as important as what we say. And then once that we've put those connection principles into play, we use the strategies that he lays out, which I love again. You want to communicate comfort, right? Let the brain know it's all all good. We need to validate their emotions, even if we think there's no validity to it. We need to validate it. And we need to stop talking. Right? So that's our big thing. I always say is the minute we become parents, we get a switch turned on, our lecture forever worn switch. Like, oh, little words. When time is your bad, use little words, few words, and just use actions. You save your words for when times are good. And then you reflect what you hear, so you've calmed them down, you've connected with them, and now you can redirect them. And you want to redirect them, again, with reducing your words. That's going to prevent you from getting into that lecturing mode. Because the minute they lecture, the minute you start lecturing, what happens? Ooh. Yeah. That's not just for kids, right? If we've got adults in our lives that like to lecture us, we don't like to spend a lot of time with them.
My 2-year-old tells me to stop talking. He says, Mommy, stop talking when I start to lecture.
Yeah.
He says, Mommy, stop talking.
They don't like
so all I do is end up kind of trying to argue with him. Well, negotiate him. Like, well, if you eat two meatballs, then you can go watch TV. I'm just constantly negotiating. This just started. Like, he's 2.5. He's going to be 3 in April.
Oh, you're negotiating the 2.5-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's for him to sit down and eat dinner.
Yeah.
This just started. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I don't think that's normal.
It can be very normal. Right, our kids are different, but Oh, yeah. I've seen my 3-year-old nephew negotiated a $20 spending spree at Target if he would finish his orange juice. This was at a family Christmas. I was like, you're the adult. And now Cole's, 14 and negotiations gone up a notch. Okay, so we can get to that during the question thing, because I've got some strategies on that, because that can definitely, suddenly you're like, what is going on? My little kid is negotiating everything. And the big thing is we still need to draw those boundaries, right? Like, we need to make sure we're drawing those boundaries, but we want to do it in a way that it's going to lessen as much engagement and pushback as possible. So with the connect to redirect, basically what you want to keep in mind is that we need to, when they're freaking out, when they're having their tantrum, whatever it is, we need to connect first with them and then direct them to what we need. And now there's another way. Dr. Neufeld is another person I read a lot that I love. He's up in Canada. A little different, but it's collect to direct. And he says, look, when they're babies, we're, constantly collecting. Oh, it's jammy time. We're making eye contact. We're cuddling up. We're, yay, playing with their feet and stuff. Like, we're collecting, and then we're getting jammies on. And then as soon as they get older, what happens? Go get your pajamas on. We're not collecting anymore. And so this is really powerful for kids that have trouble transitioning from different things. I don't know if anyone has one of those kiddos. I do. So this is when, instead of being like, I need you to come to the dinner table, come to the dinner table, I might leave it on the stove, come over to sweet little Zoe doing her floor puzzle, rub it on the back, love her up. What are you doing, puzzles? Look at this puzzle. It's amazing. A puzzle of the world. What a great place we live. Hey, sweet girl, it's time for dinner. For dinner. And then she comes. And she comes without a power struggle. Because I've collected first. Mm-hmm. Collecting, being that emotional contact, right? Humans, we're pack animals, we're just like dogs. We need that human connection. So I collect that. Very different than coming in and saying, Zoe, get to the table. I need you to the table. We're having dinner. Well, there's your power struggle.
I feel like you're giving a power. Like, I grew up with like the parents or the mom who were like, if you didn't do what I said, I'm gonna hit you with my slumber, So I feel like if I'm doing something like that, I'm like, that's a sign of weakness.
No.
So it's just such a
yeah, and that's a struggle, and that's that copycat whiplash parenting that I talked about. And a lot of times, if we want to see changes in our kids, the first person that needs to change first is us, and that can be hard because you're like, well, it worked for me. I'm a functioning adult, but then you gotta start like pulling back that layers and being like, what is my relationship with my mom? The fact that I lived a big part or made behavioral choices based in fear. How has that affected me as an adult, right? And then realize, what do I want for my kids? It's not. You're not giving up. If anything, it's more power. Because you're able to connect with them, heart to heart, emotion to emotion, and then ask them to do something. And that's going to pay dividends long term, for sure. So then the last one on that line is name it to tame it. So it's the same concept as the collect to direct, but we put a narrative with it. And so if, you know, your kid's having this emotional tantrum and it's leading to this power struggle, you want, because this is what we want for our kids. We can actually speed up the development of the prefrontal cortex. 24, we can speed that up by quite a few years by helping develop that prefrontal cortex and self-regulation. But in order to do that, we first need to co-regulate, right? We can't tell these little people, like, self-regulate. I read it somewhere. It's supposed to be really great. Like, we need to be like, breathe with me, sweet girl. Breathe with me. So here's the thing. You were at the park. You met a friend. You were having so much fun with this new friend. You love new friends. New friends are the best. And then it was time to go home. And you didn't want to go home. And then I got you in the car, and you were really upset, and you hit your head. And then you were mad because now your head hurt, and we got home. And then I said, before we ate, you needed to wash your hands, which you didn't want to do because then you were super, super hungry. So that's kind of what we got going on, right? So you're giving this narrative, it's name it to tame it. It's basically creating this narrative for them so they know what's going on. Because for a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old to be like, oh my God, I don't know what's, like, it's scary for them too. Like, for us to witness it, we're like, it's scary for us to witness it. But for them to be like, what are these emotions and what's going on? So we give the narrative, and that tames it, right? And you can see that. I've seen it in my kids. When I give the narrative, they're going to be like, oh, that's what's going on. And that was hard on the playground. Like, they're 8 now, so a lot of it will be like, I'll pick them up, and then they're really cranky at home, and they start picking on each other. And then when I start asking questions, I'm like, oh, this little playground thing with this particular kid at school can be really mean. And I'll say that. You're really excited for recess. Da, 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 da. You know, I'll tell the narrative. And that will tame it. And that helps build that prefrontal cortex. It helps them notice those emotions and name it and build that regulation up. Okay, so questions and delayed consequences are left. They're really quick. Questions are such a great way to avoid power struggles because we don't take it on. We give it back to them. Two things are happening. Okay, I love the brain. We're gonna talk about it. The brain needs closure. It wants closure, in particular the prefrontal cortex. So when we ask a question to our kiddos, they're like, ooh, must answer, must stop resisting whatever we were resisting, must answer that. Questions also hand the problem back to them. It also turns the process internally. So last night, my sweet little Zobug, who's gonna be an artistic genius, I think her room is always gonna be a mess, but I think she's gonna be an artistic genius, was like, oh, you know, she had her check-off sheet for getting ready at night. Fully pumped, final chapter, Simone Biles. Oh, do this. So there I am at the table, all ready to go. Quinn's waiting, getting a little frustrated. And so I just start asking her questions. He's over, like, she sat down, opened her book, like she was ready to color. You know what I mean? I was like, coloring? And it'd be too easy to be like, babe, put it down, we're not coloring. Oh, you know, especially like the sweet little ADD kiddo. And then I just put my hand on her and I said, So what should you be doing? Coloring my book. So what, I mean, this is how it is, right? But by using questions, she's internalizing the process. Because I'm using questions, they're not demands. I'm not giving her demands. Her amygdala's not fighting me. And she goes, I should close my book. Closes her book. She goes, what do you want to do first? I don't know what I should do first. Right? And then we're in bed curling up reading Simone Biles. But how quickly last night could that have gone south? Right? Because Quinn's on it. She wants to go. I'm tired. It's been a long work day. And I just want to tell her. But when you use those questions, you hand it back. But it's not, you don't just stop at one question, right? Like when they come in and just throw their backpack or their coat there, if you don't have a system in place, Is that the best place for your coat?
It is the best place for my coat.
It's a great place for my coat. You know, like, you have to be prepared for that. It's interesting. What's going to happen if we're walking there and it gets slid under the couch, and then you forget about it, and then it's time to go out, and you don't know where the coat is, but we're leaving. Now you have to go to school without a coat. It's kind of cold. What happens then? I'll figure it out. And then I go, okay, we'll figure it out. And I actually secretly hope that we leave in the morning and she doesn't know where coat is. Because that's the quickest way for her to learn. It's like, wow, that was really cold today, not to have my coat. Maybe I should be hanging it up, right? But just ask those questions. Put it back on them. Anytime you want to give your kiddo a demand or a statement, stop yourself and think to yourself, can I do it in a question? I'm about to give a demand, which is food for power struggle. Can I do a question instead? And then the last one we're going to finish up is delayed consequences, which is a favorite as well. And delayed consequences are only going to work for 4 and older in theory. I could do it around 3 with Quinn because the time continuum needs to be involved. But it's this idea, I don't know about you all, but when I was in college, way back when, doing my psychology classes and education classes, I was taught consequences have to be immediate, right? This is all based in behaviorism, B.F. Skinner. And so Love and Logic, where this comes from, says maybe our kids are a little smarter than monkey, dogs, and pigeons. Throwing it out there. Maybe we should investigate this. So they got an independent study, and what they came up with, what the researchers came up with, is the only thing that needs to be immediate is the knowledge of a consequence. The consequence itself does not have to be immediate. That was like, when I learned that as an educator, I wasn't a parent yet when I got trained in this, but I was like, what? This is so liberating, right? Because when we're in the moment, if we truly believe consequences have to be immediate, when we're in the moment, we're most likely right here, if not brainstem. So we're probably not going to come up with a great consequence. It might be more punitive, and punitive is the fastest way for a power struggle. It's not going to be logical. It's going to be more retribution-based, right, instead of reflecting on poor choices and behavior change. And I'm probably going to deliver it with anger. And the minute I deliver a consequence with anger, the kid now is angry with me instead of their poor choices. And we want our kiddos to hurt from the inside out, not the outside in. And so by being able to deliver it, to delay it, and this is all you have to do, you have to like, we come from the Montessori background, so I like to have my kids do their own judging, but we've gotten to a point when mama says, oh, that was an interesting choice, that's when you don't go. But what I would say to them is, oh, that's an interesting choice. We're going to have to do something about it, but not right now. I want to talk to Dad, and I'm going to get dinner on the table. I'll check in with you before bed. And then if I really want them to feel it, I'll say, try not to worry about it. When you say try not to worry about it, you create this anticipatory consequence technique. And then what happens is the anticipation of the consequence takes on just as much behavior modification, if not more, than the consequence itself. But what I find with my 8-year-old girls, when I say, oh, that's an interesting choice, we're going to have to do something about it, but not right now, not in a space where I want to talk about it, because that's the other thing, like, I'm most likely not in a space where I want to talk about it, I'm probably, like, really upset. Then they start being like, okay, well, do you need anything right now? Like, can I clean the bathroom, or do you want a massage? You know, and I'm like, this would probably give me some energy, sure, yeah. So then I'm getting, we play massage a lot, it's a really fun game. Highly recommend teaching your kids how to play spa. You got little ones, it's the best. But then they often come to me, even little 8-year-old kiddos, and have their solution. Wasn't sure. I mean, to be honest, I don't have to use this much because they really figure everything out. But if they do, they'll say, well, you know, we were thinking, I don't know if you and Dad got to talk yet and have come up with something, but we were thinking what we could do is blah, 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 blah. And then I'm going to be like, that's great. Like, they go to bed tired because they've done the thinking, the prompt, right? Like, we need to shift that up. Usually what happens is we go to bed exhausted because we've been solving their problem, you know, doing all that stuff. Oh, my girls solve their problems. They often solve ours. The other day we overslept the alarm and they came in and they were dressed, backpacks. They're like, I think you guys have overslept. It's time to go to school. And we're like, ah. Yeah. They can get there, hey? They're 8. They're pretty amazing kiddos. But I gotta say, love and logic Dr. Siegel, Dr. Neufeld. I mean, we worked at it. Our Outward Bound stuff, for sure. Okay, so that covers quick. Like I said, a lot when I do my four-week class, we deep dive on all of these. But I'm hoping that these give you some, at least some of these techniques you feel like you can walk out and utilize right now. And I'm happy to answer any questions if people have it. If not, you are free to go.